This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
Abortion Jones stays true to his name. We go there now on Tactics. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Tactics. It is great to be with you this morning. I am Caleb Colquitt, in case you were unaware. And this is Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. Great to be with every single one of you. It is Friday. The weekend is finally upon us. Just one more day to go, everybody. Hang in there for the remainder of the day. And in the craziness of everything that happened this week, with everything that was going on with the State of the Union, with the memo, the past couple news cycles have been so heated, so crazy, so up in the air that most people completely missed. And I saw a little bit about it, but there was just so much going on, even I didn't have time to cover it because I only have 2 hours a day. We missed one of the most telling and important votes in Congress in a long time. And that is, there was a bill that was put up that would make it illegal in all 50 states to perform an abortion after 20 weeks. That's 5 months. So even though all this bill would do is say you got to make the decision in 5 months instead of 9 months, this bill wound up failing in the Senate 51 to 46. So there is no federal limitation, at least, on abortion. There are some states that have limits on that, but as of right now, there are no limitations on abortion in the time period in which you can get them on the federal level. And it only took 26 days after Doug Jones took the oath of office and became the senator representing the state of Alabama for him to prove that he is not only pro-abortion, but as radical on abortion as a person can be. I mean, aside from killing the baby a few minutes after it's born, I don't think it's possible to get any more radical on abortion than Doug Jones is. And he proved that with this vote. And I'm not sure exactly why this was, but I had a lot of people that really doubted me on this. And, you know, I'm not saying this to rub anybody's nose in it, but there was almost this cognitive dissonance that because they didn't like Roy Moore and they thought that Doug Jones was the better option and so they threw their vote behind him, they didn't want to believe that Doug Jones was as radical on abortion as he is. But this vote proves where his true allegiance lies on this issue, which is he denies the personhood of anybody in the womb, regardless of how long they've been there. And that he's perfectly fine with a mother murdering her own child in her womb right up to the point of birth. Doesn't bother him, apparently. And so I'm hoping that with this vote, any doubts that people had about where Doug Jones stands on this issue have been answered, which nobody should really be surprised. He told everyone that this was where he stood. In that interview with Chuck Todd, he said in that interview that he didn't believe in any restriction on abortion. And that was only, what, 2 or 3 months before the election? So the people that voted for him saying, oh, he's not really that bad on abortion, I'm sorry, y'all had the available information. Y'all knew what you were getting into when you voted for him. If you didn't, that's your fault for being uninformed, because that was everywhere. I played that clip on this show. I talked about it several times. Other commentators, I mean, it was part of the discussion during the election. There was no doubt that whether you like Doug Jones on other issues or not, he was as radically pro-abortion as a person can possibly be. to put in perspective how little this bill did, and Doug Jones couldn't even support that, this bill would have only affected slightly over 1.3% of all abortions. Because if you're looking at the statistics of when an abortion takes place, according to the CDC's rubric of this and how they measure it, they start the timer at 21 weeks. So 1 week longer than this bill would have protected, and about 1.3% of abortions take place in that time period. So if you added the ones that go to up to 20 weeks, it would have been slightly above that. So even though 98% of abortions would be completely unaffected by this bill and would still happen, and yes, that is a tragedy, but at least this bill would have saved some lives. Even though it would have affected such a minute portion of abortions in this country, Doug Jones and the Democrats could not even support that. And to give you a little insight into where the baby is biologically, physiologically at this point in the pregnancy, by the time 5 months happens, the baby is essentially fully developed. There are a few things that develop a little bit more after this point, but not much. His lungs are not usually fully functioning. They can function, and babies that are born at this time can breathe outside the womb, but they need help in doing so. But their lungs may need a little work, but by and large, all the systems that an infant has that's born at 9 months are already present. They're already there. By that point in the pregnancy, when you're getting close to that final trimester, the only thing that really happens is the baby gets bigger. Everything that the baby has gets bigger and grows. But all the systems are already there, including the nervous system. So really, there's physiologically not much different in a baby that has reached 5 months inside the womb and a baby that was just born. The main difference is size. That's about it. And so when you're looking at this physiologically, there's really very little difference in the two. Also, research shows that because they are essentially fully developed, that they have nervous system, including pain receptors, and that babies in the womb have been shown to respond to stimuli. At this point in the pregnancy, if they reach a probe in and they touch the baby's body, the baby reacts to that touch. It can feel things. It can feel when it's being touched. It'll recoil, react to that. And if you've ever seen a intensive care unit with a baby that has developed to this point, they look and act pretty much exactly like a regular baby. They may need medical assistance. They have some technology there to keep them alive because they were born a little too soon. But as far as the way they react to things, react to light, react to touch, more or less, they're pretty much exactly the same as an infant that was just born that was fully, you know, made it all the way to the 9 months, to the gestation period. And many babies that are born at 20 weeks survive and grow up normal without a lot of health problems. I actually know one, went to church for years with this kid. And now full-grown man, married, I believe he's got a kid on the way. And, I mean, physically in pretty good shape, doesn't have any health problems. When you're getting to this point in the pregnancy, as late as this is, they can survive outside the womb. And a lot of people, a lot of Democrats will point to vitality, but at 20 weeks, vitality is pretty much across the board already a consideration. If you've got the medical technology, and a lot of hospitals in this country do, there's very few that don't, then you can survive outside the womb at 20 weeks easily. That doesn't mean that every single baby that's born at that point does survive and does get to that point, but there's a very high probability of that happening. And so the viability argument, at least for 20 weeks and after, has pretty much been thrown out the window. And that's part of the problem. Whenever you draw this false line at anywhere other than conception, if you're drawing it at vitality, because of the way science works and continues to advance, vitality is a moving target. So even though 20 weeks may not have been much in the way of vitality, you couldn't really make a vitality argument for somebody that's only 5 months in the gestation period, maybe in the 70s. Well, now that's a perfectly normal vitality argument because they can survive at that point. And what's going to happen is as medical technology continues to advance, they're working on an artificial womb right now they're getting to the point to where conception is the point of vitality. They will advance to that point at some date. We don't know exactly when, but they're working on it now. And as quickly as medical technology is advancing, it will not be long before the vitality argument isn't an argument at all. And that's important because vitality was, by the Supreme Court, a consideration when it came to abortion. In a Supreme Court case, they made that legally a consideration. So the vitality argument is important. Here's another thing that's important, and this is something to wrap your head around. Because Democrats are constantly pointing to other countries, saying we need to do this, we need to be like this. Bernie Sanders, that was half of his campaign speeches. We are the only undeveloped or the only industrialized country that does not offer X. That's what he said for most of the campaign. And yet, when it comes to this, when it comes to a ban on abortion after 20 weeks, the United States is one of only 7 countries that allows for that. That includes Canada, China, North Korea, Vietnam, the Netherlands, and Singapore. Not great company to be in. You're looking at this list and seeing the other countries that allow for this barbaric practice, and you look at Canada and you're like, okay, well, Canada's a developed country. I can kind of see that. But China, North Korea, Vietnam, and Singapore? There are not many lists of countries in the world that you want to be in with those countries. In fact, the Washington Post did a fact check on this claim that the U.S. is the only one out of 7 nations that allows for this, because it was put out in a statement by the Trump administration, and so Washington Post did their Washington Post fact check on it, and they gave it the rare Geppetto checkmark. In other words, they could not find anything wrong with this claim. They couldn't find even a hint of dishonesty in it. They said it may not show the whole picture, but as far as whether or not it's accurate or not, it's a pretty accurate statement. And they couldn't find any flaws with it, so they marked it as true. And the Washington Post, not exactly a right-leaning publication. And in that same article where they did the fact check, they made a ranking list of the ones that are most restrictive to least restrictive on abortion. And only North Korea, Vietnam, and China had less restriction, according to them. Remember, China, where it's illegal to have more than 2 kids, depending on where you live, and in some cases, 1 kid. And pretty much, if you're a girl, you're getting aborted because everybody wants a son. I don't know where the women's rights people are crowing about that, but evidently that doesn't matter to them. So think about that. Washington Post, according to them, we are the 4th most radical country when it comes to abortion. And there is nobody more radical on abortion than Doug Jones. He's as pro-abortion as a person can get. And this vote shows that. Right up to the point of being born, he is okay with killing it at any time, apparently through any method, according to him. And this should come as no surprise, because he did exactly what he said he would do. And as much as I detest what he's done, as sad as it is to say it, that's what the people of Alabama voted for. I am incredibly grateful that he does not have a full term. That in the year 2020, we will have a chance to replace him as our senator, because he does not represent Alabama or our values. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to call in. We'll be back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
The Declaration of Independence laid the cornerstone of human government upon the first precepts of Christianity. John Quincy Adams.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. You can also tweet us at Tactics Radio. Either way you want to get into the show. Now, I am running up against a hard break in just about 4 minutes, but we're going to get as many callers as I can in the short amount of time. So we're going to someone who I am thrilled to hear from, have not heard from in a very long time. Average Joe, good morning.
Good morning, Caleb. your statistics on are your the 20-week period. I had a friend of mine who worked as a neonatal intensive care nurse in for the military, and he handled children from all over the country. And I asked him several years ago, what was the youngest child he ever saw survive? And he said 21 weeks, and then it was blind because of the oxygen and the things he had to do. Mm-hmm. But I looked up the statistics just a while ago. They don't even list 20 weeks. The earliest they list is 22 weeks, and the survival rate at 22 weeks is 21%. So I don't know what it is at 20 weeks, but if you look at 25 weeks, it's about 70%. So in just a few weeks, it dramatically improves.
Right, because what you're doing is you're moving at that point that you're talking about into the third trimester where the survival rate increases dramatically.
And it really has to do with premature babies. The biggest thing is their lungs. They just can't breathe. And that was the issue with that 21-year-old, because of the oxygen they had to give it so much and the concentration, it made it blind. But, it's not an issue with me. I'm not talking about whether abortion's right or when should it be, but just the numbers themselves, you know, that's and I know you talked about Supreme Court using that viability rule in establishing abortion at a time when you could have it.
Right.
Or as late as you could have it.
It was a consideration. It wasn't like they didn't make a ruling on it specifically or else it would already be banned. But yeah. So go ahead.
I don't think anybody wants to. I think very few people want to abort a fetus that is viable outside the womb. That is, I mean, I'm certainly opposed to that. I'll say that.
Well, and I agree, and I think that the average American probably that is where they stand on that, and that's why I think that Congress was wildly out of step by failing this ban. Because,
yeah,
I mean, if you can't make up your mind in 5 months. I mean, I don't, you know where I stand on abortion. I don't think abortion should ever be considered at any point. But nonetheless, you should be able to make this decision in 5 months. That's plenty of time.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of factors in why women end up waiting so late, maybe. But there has to be a hard line on when you can abort a child, an unborn infant. And I know your perception or your belief is that life begins at conception.
Right.
But I will say also that, you know, simple-celled organisms and other things respond to pain and stimulus too, not just, you know, babies certainly at 20 weeks would, like you said, be nearly fully developed. It's just that they have to, the systems are fully there. It's just they have to mature up until the point where they can support life.
Right.
And you know, who wants to harm a child, a harmless child that never did anything to anybody, didn't ask to be born anyway.
Well, and that's really what it goes back to. The core issue is that we're dealing with innocent life here. And you're right that there are plenty of organisms that respond to stimuli, but this is a human life, because this isn't, you know, a bacteria or a puppy or a hippopotamus or whatever else it may be. This is a human body, and if left to its own devices, it will develop into a fully grown human adult. And so that's where that distinction lies.
Yeah, barring some other complication, but yeah, most of those children would go on to develop, and there's nothing wrong with them at that point. But, I really enjoy hearing your points and you make people think about the issues, because you need to discuss those issues.
Thank you, Average Joe. I appreciate the call, and we are up against a hard break. I've got a couple seconds. We'll try to get more calls on the other side.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
Colossians 3:17. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to grab one of our two open lines. You can also tweet us at Tactics Radio. And we are going to jump back to the phones here in just one moment. I did want to thank Average Joe for his call. I didn't get a chance to do that before the break. I try to do that with all the callers. So thank you, Average Joe. Appreciate your call. And we're going to go ahead and go to Miss Daisy on line two. Good morning.
Good morning, dear. If I keep listening to you, I'm going to get some of your intelligence.
Well, I don't have as much to offer as a lot of people, but
I should have had you one of my students in Virginia. I tell you, you're a smart young man.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Now, I don't want anyone to misinterpret what I'm going to say now.
Okay.
But I heard you mention the fact about the new senator up on the Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, I think killing is wrong. I don't care which direction you go. But now, you know, you're saying that what we're thinking different here in the South. But they should have thought about that years ago. Have they changed their way of thinking about folks? How many persons has been killed in this state, southern state? Now, I'm glad they've changed their ideas about folks, how they feel about killing folks. Now, I don't want anyone misinterpret what I'm saying.
No, it happens right here in the South. 20 children are aborted a day right here in Montgomery. I mean, that is a staggering statistic when I saw that. And so the attitudes about abortion, about human life, unfortunately, they're not, you know, they're better. They have there's less support for abortion in the South, obviously, but there's some people that support it.
Well, I'm glad they're changing their mind about thinking about don't be killing anyone.
I hope so.
I think they should have thought about this years and years ago. But that's gone, and goodbye of that. Okay, sweetie, I'm going to get on to the bank. Thank you, sweetie.
Yes, ma'am. You have a good day. I appreciate it. Thank you, Miss Daisy. And, no, I mean, absolutely right there that the attitudes about abortion are starting to change. We're actually seeing a drop in this in my generation, which is something that I'm incredibly proud of. Because a lot of times people talk about millennials and some of the issues that they have with them, and I understand that. I understand that there's, just like every generation, millennials have things that they're good at generally as a demographic and things that they're not so good at. But at least on abortion, my generation especially, we are the most pro-life generation since before Roe v. Wade. So my generation actually has a more abhorrent view of abortion than the vast majority of people older than us, our parents' generation, our grandparents' generation. And I think a lot of that has to go back to our first baby pictures are sonograms. They're not pictures of us a few weeks old or coming home from the hospital, anything. Our first baby pictures are ultrasounds and sonograms. So it's easy for us to connect with people inside the womb because we can see what we looked like when we were in the womb and how developed we were and so on and so forth. And so because of that, and this is a trend that you've been seeing since right around the 90s, which is when the trend started going in the opposite direction, you saw approval for abortion actually climb up until I think it was 92 or 93 maybe, and then you started seeing it decline amongst people. What was the difference? What change took place? Well, the change that took place is that was the generation that first saw themselves in the womb. When they reached the age of majority, all of a sudden you started seeing approval for abortion to start to slide instead of climb. And I think especially my generation, with the technology that we had back when we were about to be born, because of that, that has changed a lot of hearts and minds. And another thing, too, that especially with this ban that would have affected such a small amount of abortions, when you're looking at the abortions that take place overall, and also with the point that the baby is developed at this point, with it being able to react to stimuli, feel pain, all of those things, survive outside the womb, it shows how radical not just Doug Jones, but the left as a whole is on abortion. And this is one of the things that is deeply disturbing to me, that no amount of data or evidence will change their minds, because when you talk to people that are pro-abortion, and I know that there are exceptions to this, but I'm just going as a generalization here, a general rule. When I've debated and talked to people that are pro-abortion, you can tell all their stances are based on feelings. And the reason that I say that is you present them with new data, data that they haven't seen, that should at least make them reconsider their stance. And they either do one of two things. They deny the evidence, even though, you know, you have evidence from doctors, OBGYNs, gynecologists, different medical journals that have been published, peer-reviewed, all substantiated, and they'll either just flat out deny it or say, well, no, that can't be right. And the only reason that they have to deny it is because they don't like what the data is showing. Or they'll say something like, well, I'm in favor of a ban on abortion if the baby is viable. But then when they say that, and what's funny is when you're talking to abortion people, they have a hard time with their own terminology because they'll accidentally call it a baby from time to time. And then it was really funny. I was having a discussion with one woman about this, and she was saying, she kept constantly saying baby, I mean fetus. And she corrected herself like five or six times in a very short conversation. So even they instinctively know this. But when you're looking at the point of viability, you say, well, when is that point? And they don't know. They can't give you an answer. So something that's supposed to be an important issue to them, something that they have researched, they have no idea. And when you say, well, you know, actually, babies up to about 5 months have been able to survive outside the womb, and we're getting to the point to where babies even younger than that will be able to survive outside the womb because of new technology that's coming out. Well, then all of a sudden they say, well, I don't know about all that. And so it does show that it's not based on evidence. They're science deniers. And there's really no other way to be in favor of abortion than being a science denier. At the point of conception, when the egg and the sperm unite and form a zygote, at that point, that baby has a completely unique genetic code. And if it lives to be 100 years old and dies and becomes fossilized in, you know, 20,000 years down the road, they dig up its bones and identify the DNA in it, it's going to have that same DNA that it had when it was a zygote. I mean, unless there's some kind of weird mutation that happens, which would be an outlier, not the common, you know, the common way that nature unfolds. And so when you think about that, that it has this completely unique set of DNA. It's not the mom's DNA. It's not the father's DNA. It's its DNA. This baby's DNA. Because it has that unique genetic code in its nucleus. That is the point, that it is a unique human life, because it has human DNA that no other human has and no other human ever will have. Unless, of course, something happens after that and it forms a twin. That's the only other way that someone else could have its exact genetic code, which would just be two babies with the same genetic code. But nonetheless, the point in all of that is that the left is so far on that no data or evidence that comes out will change their mind. They'll deny the science. They'll pretend it doesn't exist. And in some cases, I don't want to go too far into the stereotypes, but in a lot of cases, these people on the left that are arguing for this, that are arguing that babies can't feel pain, will tell you that trees can feel pain, that you shouldn't fish because worms and fish can feel pain. But for whatever reason, when it's a baby inside the womb, oh no, it can't feel pain until right at the point it's born. Well, that doesn't make any sense. Those nerves had to develop at some point. The nerves don't magically form as it's going through the birth canal. That is not how biology works. Those pain receptors are functioning long before it's born. And so if that's the point that they're using, then it makes sense to be in favor of a ban on abortions after 20 weeks. I remember one time there was this one. We were doing a poultry science workshop with Dr. Lean up at Auburn. Great poultry science division, by the way. Y'all know that I was an ag major at Auburn, so I did some stuff like that with FFA. And they had this one particular workshop. And one of the things that we were doing is that we were looking at baby chicks at different stages of development inside the egg. And the way that we did that was we had to crack open the egg, because you got to open up the egg to see what's inside it. And so we were doing this, and, you know, they're chickens. That's what they are. They're animals. They're not people. And I remember that I was mentioning this at one point to a class, and one of the girls in this class, who was pretty far left, was so angry at me for being so incredibly cruel, even though we killed the chicks immediately to make sure they didn't feel any pain, anything like that. I mean, we did it as humanely as possible. But, you know, that's part of learning about poultry science, is that you see the stages of development inside the egg, and to do that, you have to break open the egg, and of course, that means the chick won't be able to survive. And so, or at least not survive very long. And so this girl was furious about this, about how barbaric it is that Auburn University allowed something like this to happen. And I said, oh, hold on, aren't you pro-abortion? And she had never thought about that. She was more upset about what happened to this little baby chick than she was what would happen to a baby in the same situation that had not yet been born, just like the chick hadn't been born. And so when you confront there is an inconsistency there that you can show these people. You just have to find the right method to do so, because there is a scientific inconsistency you have to have to be in favor of abortion, because they're willing to essentially base the fate of a human life based on how another person, in this case the mother, happens to feel about it at the time. That's the only basis that they've got for this. Because otherwise, they would have no line or no rubric to decide whether this baby in the womb is a baby and this baby is a female. And you'll hear this all the time. It's natural. People talk about, when is the baby coming? And that's not just a person on the right thing. People on the right and left do that. They talk about the baby being there as though it's coming. They talk about it like it's a child. The only distinction on the left is, does the mom want it or not? You cannot base whether or not a person is a person based on how someone else feels about it. If that's the case, then there was nothing wrong with what the Nazis did in Germany, because they didn't really see the Jews as being people. They felt as though the Jews weren't people. And that's what they base the value of their life on. You cannot base the value of human life on feelings. It never ends well, regardless of what group you say it about. And one thing that is really sad, and, you know, I'm not trying to poke at anybody's eye or anything like that. I'm not trying to browbeat anybody with scripture. But I do think that this is in a weird twist of irony. It's one thing that does really sadden me, because overwhelmingly, the thing that won Doug Jones the election was black people showed up in droves to vote for Doug Jones. The national media was talking about this for weeks, how important the black vote was, and they were right. I mean, demographically, black people showed up in record numbers to vote for Doug Jones, and that's one of the reasons that put him in office. 94% of the people that showed up in a presidential election to vote for Hillary Clinton showed up again to vote for Doug Jones. That's huge for a special election. The black vote was instrumental in putting Doug Jones in office. And what's sad is, in this country, if abortion had been illegal, there would be 16 million more black people in the United States of America. And because it disproportionately affects the black community, I mean, in New York, as a black child, you are statistically more likely to be aborted than you are to be born. And because that law is in place, and because we do not protect the people inside the womb, because of that, black people, if abortion were illegal, black people still would be a minority, but not nearly the minority that they are. They would comprise a much larger portion of that. And I know that people call the right people on the right racist. I've been called a racist I don't know how many times. But think about this. Under my policy, in my ideal world where abortion doesn't exist and never existed, there would be 16 million more black people in the United States, and they would comprise a much larger portion of the voting bloc, and I'm perfectly fine with that. Got no problem with that. I would rather have those people alive and walking around now. And under the Democrats' plan and the Democrats' policy, there are 16 million less black people. So ask yourself this question: who's really more likely to be the racist here? And it really does, it hurts my heart to think that all those people that are black and just have voted Democrat their whole life came out in such record numbers to vote for Doug Jones, even though that's the policy that he holds, a policy that he knows kills black people at a much higher rate than it does any other race, that was started by someone who worked with the Klan and believed that black people needed to be erased from existence. That's who Doug Jones supports. It does make you think about things. We'll try to take your calls here in just a minute. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
You do well to wish to learn our arts and ways of life, and above all, the religion of Jesus Christ. These will make you a greater and happier people than you are. George Washington.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440. And newsradio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. You can tweet us at Tactics Radio. Speaking of tweeting, actually saw this picture that they just tweeted out. Breaking news, protests continue over groundhog's decision. Hashtag not my groundhog. So they're having a little fun with Groundhog's Day over on Twitter. I guess people are upset that there's supposed to be six more weeks of winter, which is what I'm hearing now that the groundhog has decided. So anyway, we will jump back to the phones. Let's go to John from Millbrook on line one. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I wanted to weigh in on this. And
certainly.
You've heard me say this before with regard to abortion. I think the trend among the millennials is going to still be that way because I've said before, they've all seen themselves in an ultrasound because all the doctors gave the ultrasound videotape to the parents and the kids. The ultrasound, you've seen yours. And as a result of that, it's kind of hard to say, you know, I would have liked to have been eliminated. And somebody should have had a choice in my life being eliminated. And that's the stance that is taken by the left. And there's no way you can justify that because it makes it personal when you see yourself in the womb.
Well, that's the thing. In any sort of situation, when you can see more of yourself in the victim, that does make it more personal and it makes you more likely to consider, well, what if that did happen to me? And so when we're able to see ourselves in a sonogram, videos of ourselves in the womb, that kind of thing, and we're able to see with the technology now, with 3D rendering that is really phenomenal, you can see all the detail and everything, and you can see yourself in that position. It's a lot easier for you to say, what if my mom had been pro-abortion? What if she had decided to get rid of me? And so it does give you a level of empathy that I don't think older generations really had because it was hard for them to imagine themselves in that position.
Well, you see, I think that would make a great commercial. You show a videotape of the child in the womb,
right,
the technology that you're talking about, and then have the child say, I'm glad my mom didn't make that decision.
Yeah, that actually would be a pretty effective political ad, I think.
You would think it would be. It wouldn't change the left, the hardcores, because they believe in killing anybody at any time. They also, a lot of them also believe in that life isn't really viable after you're 80 years old either.
Well, and see, that's one of the big differences that, and it goes back to the call that I was having with Average Joe, with the rank and file Democrats and the people running the party. Because there are a lot of people that I know that actually vote Democrat. I don't know why they do, but they happen to also be pro-life, and they don't like their own party stance on abortion. But the top brass at the Democrats, they are for abortion on demand, partial birth abortion, doesn't matter what it is. They are for no restriction on abortion whatsoever. And they are out of step with a lot of people in their base because of that. And I would hope that at some point they will pay a political price for that, but unfortunately we've not really seen that so far.
Yeah, and it's not made into the issue every time. They want that not. They don't want that to be an issue during a campaign. It isn't a deal breaker with the voter. They don't want it that way because I think they'll start to lose that over time because the younger generation will have a closer tie to it.
I think
the older ones do.
I think you're right, but you can look at the election of Doug Jones and kind of see that because he realized, and part of it is because he's in a very red state that's very pro-life with a lot of religious people, but he understood that that was not something that he needed to talk about. He answered questions directly about abortion when they were asked to him, but as far as like going out and making that one of his things, he kind of tried to shy away from ever talking about abortion if he could help it because he knew that wasn't going to poll well with the people in Alabama.
Yeah. Well, maybe he'll lose next time.
Gosh, I hope so. I hope we put up a better candidate and somebody. I'm hoping we can put up a real conservative this time that will stand for life and will stand up for the unborn. Thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it. Always good to hear from John from Millbrook. And that is something that is unfortunate to me. Whether or not you like Roy Moore, take that out of it. That election's over. There's no sense in dwelling on it. We can look back at it to learn some lessons. But as far as, like, there's no reason to hash that out, just like there's no reason to hash out the whole Hillary Trump thing at this point. Take that out of it completely. Even if you're in favor of a lot of the things that Doug Jones is, it is a sad circumstance that now, up until 2020, Republicans are represented by somebody that does not represent their values and does not represent who we are as a state. Hour 2 is coming up.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
An internet video goes viral singing the praises of unions, but how much of it is based on the truth? We break that down now on Tactics. Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. It is Friday. It is Groundhog Day. So if you're hearing this broadcast for the 100th time because you're stuck in some kind of time loop, I apologize. But, you know, my condolences. I hope you get out of that at some point, especially if your name's Bill Murray. But anyway, we're going to go ahead and jump into the news. To what we were talking about a little bit earlier, we're going to move on from that and talk about this new video that has come out. I spotted it just the other night, and there's a couple reasons why I wanted to go ahead and start doing some video rebuttals. Because I thought about this will be a segment that I'll try to do from time to time. I don't know about setting an actual date or something. I kind of have to just wait for content to come out and then react to it. So, especially with the advent of social media in the past few years, A lot of videos have been coming out that have a different point of view, and a lot of them tend to skew left, because if you're looking at the battle between the left and the right when it comes to social media, by and large, the left is winning that fight by a lot. And part of the reason that I think that a lot of millennials, even millennials that may sometimes be conservative and vote conservative, have at least some liberal tendencies and sensibilities are because of the content they're exposed to on the internet. And so for that reason, I've kind of thought about it in my own head and what direction to go with it. And because of that, I am going to try to do some of these rebuttals, because I do think it's important. And honestly, some of it does come just from the fact that I'm a debater. This is what I'm good at. This is what I've been trained to do. And so giving a reaction and a rebuttal to a point that's been made is kind of my forte. And I think that listening to me do that will help you with your own debating skills when you're talking to your friends and neighbors. And who knows, you might even have a friend or neighbor that's getting their facts directly from one of these videos that you might be able to, at least, even if it's not the exact same data, you will be used to seeing this kind of thing and being able to react to it and talk intelligently about it with the hope of being able to change their mind at some point. So that being said, there was this video that came out by, I don't know if they refer to themselves as ATTN or a 10. Whether it's a spelling or an acronym, I'm not sure. But this organization, they've been doing viral videos for a long time. I've seen a lot of their content in the past couple of years, and they tend to lean pretty far left. And so they have this one guy on who's trying to explain what's going on, talking about income inequality, the wage gap. And so we'll go ahead and listen, and I'll pause periodically while we're listening to this and insert my own comments here. So let's go with this right now. This was one that I found. They posted it on, I think, Facebook video. So let's go ahead and listen to that now.
Unskilled labor is a term that's meant to make people feel like they don't deserve fair pay.
Okay, first of all, I know I paused it really quickly, but right out of the gate, when all you've got is using a bunch of obscenities to make your point, that's one of the early signs of a weak argument. It doesn't necessarily mean that the person's argument is weak, but it shows that they're trying to cover up the fact that they don't really have much of a point. They're just trying to make it. And unfortunately, this is something that a lot of people mistake as being a good argument tactic, that if you just berate the person with obscenities because it makes you sound serious and makes you sound angry, a lot of people will think that because it drums up the audience and that kind of thing, that it gets them into it, that that's actually making a good argument. But usually, not every time, but usually, letting loose with a bunch of obscenities and just being mad at the other person, that's the surest way to lose an argument when you're looking at the actual content of it. And it rarely, if ever, changes somebody on the other side's mind, because you haven't actually made a logical point. Let's continue to listen.
Benefits. Well, to hell with that. All labor is skilled labor. In this country, you're not paid based on the skills that you have. If that were the case, the Kardashians wouldn't have a fleet of Maseratis. No, in America, you're paid based on what you can bargain for.
Okay, so first of all, there is a little bit of truth to this because there is no reason that the Kardashians should have a fleet of Maseratis. They're essentially famous for being famous. But what they do is they put out content that, for reasons beyond my comprehension as a mortal man, a lot of people seem to like. And so because of that, they make money off of endorsing things, doing advertising, having their own TV shows, they have media deals, that kind of thing, because a lot of people find them entertaining. Now, I don't get that, but they are producing a product that a lot of people like, and so that's how they get their money. Again, you may not see why that's the case or why people enjoy that, like I don't, but it doesn't change the fact that they are being paid based on what people want. And whether or not you like it, that's how it is. I heard a very wise person once tell me you could argue against popularity, but you'd be wrong. And what he means is you can say that something shouldn't be popular. You can say that something that is popular that is wrong. But you can't say that something that is popular is not popular. You're making a, you're at a logical impasse trying to do that. And so that doesn't make any sense. Now, on his point about the unskilled labor, I've done both sides of this. I've done jobs that are considered unskilled labor, and I'm doing a job right now that is considered skilled labor. Not a lot of people can do a two-hour radio show. It's not a talent a lot of people have. And I'm not saying that to pat myself on the back, because I'm guessing that the vast majority of the people that are listening to the show right now that are in jobs that pay pretty well, a lot of you out there in the world are doing a job that the average person couldn't do, and that doesn't mean necessarily sitting behind a desk. Do you know why plumbers can charge so much? Because there aren't many people that are good at plumbing. I mean, that's a blue-collar job, but that doesn't mean it's not extremely skilled labor. That's the reason they are able to charge so much. Now, when you're talking about somebody being a waiter at a restaurant, nothing against waiters. I've been one myself. I worked my way through college cooking and waiting tables. But when you're talking about that, the average person on the street can do that job. And so part of the thing you're being paid for is your uniqueness in your skills. And you'll notice the more unique your skill is, generally speaking, the more you get paid for it, because not that many people can do that. You're a marketable commodity that's rare. And that's part of the reason we pay baseball players so much. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that baseball players are getting paid exactly what they're worth, because they're probably getting paid too much. But the point is, professional athletes, things like that, they have skills that not a lot of people have. And that's why they're paid a lot. And so the rarity of your skill has a lot to do with how much you're paid for. Now, is there a bargaining process in that? Yes. But if you want bargaining power, if you really want to have something that you can say to an employer, you need to pay me more. The best thing you can do for that is to have a skill that not a lot of other people have. And so when he's talking about you're getting paid what you can bargain for, he's actually unraveling his own argument, because part of the bargaining process is having a skill that is rare, that gets you a job that not everybody can do, that pays better than being a waiter at a restaurant or working at a retail store. And that's a bit of a misnomer, because he'll go into this a little bit later. Some people that work retail make actually really well. Some of them are working off commission, and they're not making, you know, six figures or anything. But some of the people that work in retail, they actually make a decent amount of money. And so that's a bit of a misnomer. We're going to go ahead and go to a break. We'll get into more of this. The video's only a little over a minute long, so we've already gotten through the first fifth of it, and we'll break this down a little bit more. And when he goes into the data, I'll go into a little more explanation. We'll be right back on Tactics.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Galatians 5:1. It was for freedom that Christ set us free. Therefore, keep standing firm and do not be subject again to a yoke of slavery.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440. and newsradio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. Don't forget, you can also tweet us at Tactics Radio. So no shortage of ways to get in touch with us if you want to. We try to make ourselves available to audience interaction as often as possible. So we were looking at this particular video that's on the internet that's gone viral that a lot of people are sharing and using because they like what's in it. And it was talking about everything is skilled labor. So no matter what the job is, everything's skilled labor. See, that goes back to, you can tell that this is where the ideology of this guy doing the video comes from, that everybody ought to be equal, just like communism. No matter what work you're doing, no matter how skilled you are, or how each according to his means, each according to his ability. It all comes from Marxism, saying that everybody's skilled labor. You walk off the street, you start waiting tables, you're exactly the same as the CEO of a company, and you should be paid the same. Which there is absolutely no truth to. Because you have to have years of experience, have worked your way up, and if you wind up somehow landing a job that is far above your skill level, you won't be at that job very long. And so this idea that people are not compensated for their level of skill, there may be occasional instances of that. You may be able to throw out an example here or there of somebody that's not necessarily all that skilled and doesn't really produce something of value, but yet somehow has a lot of money. But in a free market system, the vast, 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 vast majority, I'm talking like 99.99% of the people, are paid according to their own skill level. Some people are underpaid, some people are overpaid, and we can work on that. But the idea that you should be making the same regardless of what you're actually able to do is something that the average person would reject, and you can't make a case for from a market perspective. So let's go ahead and listen on to some of the other points that he makes.
Bargain for. And for decades now, American workers haven't had the bargaining power that they used to. You know those old factory jobs that people love to romanticize? You know, back in my day, a man could work on the floor and still afford to have a house and two cars and a general disregard for the rights of others, whatever.
Okay, first of all, he makes a massive misstep here in the art of persuasion. Because he says he's actually making fun of people who used to work in factories. And saying that he's trying to do the funny voice, which nothing is more embarrassing than his natural voice. I mean, granted, I have a Southern accent. I know that the vast majority of my listeners have a Southern accent. I'm not picking on the Southern accent, but this guy, I think he's laying it on thick. I think his accent isn't naturally that thick. Maybe it's just me, but as somebody who actually studies dialect and studies how to use my voice, how other people use their voices, I think he's intentionally laying on a thick Southern accent that isn't real. And I'm not sure why he's doing it, but if I had to guess, that's not really how he talks, because it doesn't sound like a natural Southern draw. But regardless of that, when we're looking at the point that he's actually making, he's insulting the very people he's claiming to help. They just have a general disregard for the rights of others. And trying to use the funny voice there, it's like, well, if you're trying to curry these people to your favor, insulting them is probably not the best way to do that. So, logical misstep there. Let's continue.
People that did those jobs weren't treated well because of the skills they had. They were treated well because they demanded it. How? One word, unions. Unions are the backbone of the American middle class, and yet, since 1983, union membership has been cut in half. And guess what? Wages have fallen right alongside it. American workers could be making, on average, about $3,100 more per year if union membership had stayed steady.
Okay, so here's the very small portion of this video that actually has some kind of data to back it up. That's not just conjecture and feelings. And that last figure that he gave, the $3,100, I have no idea where he's drawing that from, because he doesn't cite his source. Maybe it's legitimate. I don't know, because he didn't give me his source to back it up. So if you're going to make a video like this, and I know that you guys can't see the actual visual of it, he does have a graph up there that he shows where he does cite the source for the graph. But when he just throws out that $31,000 figure, doesn't cite his sources, doesn't put it in the video description or anything, just throws it out there and says it like it's a matter of fact. Maybe it is. Maybe he's getting it from a legitimate source, or maybe he's just pulling it out of thin air. I have no idea because he didn't cite his source. So if you're going to do something like this, especially if it's a video that has a description, a place where you can cite your sources, you need to go ahead and do that. And it's something that I try to do even on the air, even though I don't have a visual medium. I try to usually, at least with the time that I have, give the brief amount of say who I got my information from. So notice that this is the only part of the video that actually has any research done on it. And if you're looking at it, his data that he gives where he talks about wages falling right alongside union membership, his data is from the Economic Policy Institute. That's where he's drawing this from. And for those of you that are unaware, the Economic Policy Institute is a far left-wing think tank. In fact, it was founded and run by self-proclaimed Marxist, socialist, and anti-capitalist. The founder of it, Jeff Fox, has been a prominent figure on the left for years. He's run different think tanks that lean left. Talked about in an interview I was watching when I was doing a little research on him that he said that he's always considered himself a very important figure on the left. And, I mean, the guy is just a progressive. That's who he is. And he doesn't make any bones about it. That's the founder of this particular institute, and the EPI is also run by a guy named Gar Alperovitz, I think is the way to pronounce his name, and he is someone who has authored several books about the reason that capitalism shouldn't be the way that America's run. One of the titles of his books is actually A Socialist Plan for America. So it, right there in the title, declares himself a socialist. This is a very, very far-leaning think tank that's putting out this data and did this research. And here's the thing, there's not an ounce of truth to it. Because he says that union membership is down. Okay, that part's true. Union membership has been cut in half. Just about it. But when he's talking about wages, you notice he doesn't actually give the figure that he's talking about there. Again, I know you guys can't see the visual of it, but the other line that he shows going down isn't wages at all. It's something called, what's the word that he uses? It's got a big fancy name there. It's middle class share of aggregate income, not wages. Because if you're looking at the trend that wages have actually been doing, it's the exact opposite. And this shouldn't be a surprise to anyone, because the EPI gets the vast majority of its funding, the people doing this research, from unions. Unions are paying this institute to put out pro-union research, which is why you can't trust the data. This would be like Tropicana funding research on why orange juice is good for you. Well, of course you can't trust that data because they have a vested interest in the data going one specific way. They're paying, they're not going to pay for something that makes them look bad. And so the EPI is doing the bidding of their donors, which are labor unions that are paying them to put out pro-union data. And so, of course, their data is going to show that union membership is a good thing for jobs and wages and all that stuff, because that's what they're paying them to do. They're not going to come out with research that says the opposite. That would be a waste of money. But even if you could trust the data, he's still misleading in his presentation of that data, because he says that wages have gone down. However, if you're looking at the Social Security Administration, which is run by the federal government, according to their figures, in the same time period that is depicted in this video on the graph that they show, which is the years 1967 to 2012, the average wage has not gone down. In fact, it's actually increased from $5,000 to over $44,000. And you can look at the specific numbers. I've got the data. If you want my show prep, you can email me and I'll send it to you. But that's what the actual data shows. That's an 800% increase. So this idea that when labor union membership went down, wages went through the floor, there's absolutely no truth to that. Now, you can say that part of that is due to inflation and different. That's fine. I got no problem with you saying that that doesn't depict a larger portion of purchasing power in the quote-unquote middle class, and that's fine. We can have that discussion. But the point is, when he's talking about this, he's giving numbers that are completely made up and are misleading. Even though the data he's using isn't even real data, he's still misleading you by saying that wages have gone down. Wages have not gone down. Again, we can have arguments about whether or not the middle class is in good shape, but we can't do it with fake data like this. And the middle class share of aggregate income, which is the figure that he's actually using, that was something that was developed specifically by the EPI, the same company that is doing this research that's funded by unions. And when you're looking into it, what does that actually mean? Well, it means whatever they want it to mean because they made up the term. And here's the question. What does it mean to be middle class? There's not a concrete definition of that in raw numbers. And even if there were, then they can make the data say pretty much whatever they want to, because it's going to change over time. So somebody that was middle class in the start of their study, 1967, that's going to be very different than what it meant to be middle class in 2012. And another thing, too, part of the reason that they could give that cutoff point at what point you're no longer middle class, whatever that may be, again, didn't have the actual link for that, so I don't know exactly what piece of data. I'm just trusting that he's using the data from EPI because that's the source that he cited. When you're looking at that, with that middle class, part of the reason that there may be less middle class aggregate income is because there's less people in the middle class because they've moved on to being upper class. In other words, by their definition, by their numbers, because of inflation and other things, the reason that there may be less quote unquote middle class people with money, according to the EPI, could also be because they're making so much more money that the middle class has a smaller share of that. And so you see how it's really, really easy to manipulate data to say, well, really pretty much whatever the heck you want it to say, if you're the one making the definitions of what the numbers are supposed to tell you. With that, you can do pretty much anything with the data. And here's the bigger point to me. And we'll try to get to a break and get to your calls, because I know a lot of you have been waiting patiently for several minutes on this. They never ask why union membership is down, because they tell you that union membership is way down. And that's actually something that is true, because you can look at data from other sources and see that it is down. But they never ask why union membership is decreased. Well, there's a couple of reasons. First of all, a lot of states are becoming right to work. Does right to work mean that unions can't have members? No, doesn't mean that at all. What right to work means is there is no legal requirement for you to join a union. In other words, you can join a union, but that decision is left up to you. In states that aren't necessarily right to work, it's actually illegal to, for example, go work in a factory that makes cars unless you belong to the auto workers union. The government actually mandates in those states that you must be a union member just to have a job there. In right to work states, that option is left entirely up to you. You can be a member of the union, you cannot be a member of the union. And because of that, a lot of people in these right-to-work states are looking at how much they're paying in dues to these unions, and then also looking at what the benefits are and saying, yeah, it's not really worth it to me. I'd rather just keep my money. They're making that decision because the unions are not providing a service that they feel is in their best interest, or at least not to the point to where they're willing to give that amount of money of dues to them. And so the reason union membership is down is because the union members themselves are looking at whether or not the union benefits them, and they're saying, yeah, it's not worth it. It's not as though some evil corporation is somehow squashing the union. I don't even know what legal means they would use to do that in the first place. So when you're looking at this, they don't ask that question of why union membership is down, but if you're looking at the actual rights of that, why would union workers abandon a union if it helps them so much, as is the point that he's making? Well, the simple fact is that they wouldn't. The reason that they're leaving the unions is because, right or wrong, they are perceiving what the union is doing as not being in their best interest and not worth the dues that they're paying. And that's why union membership has gone down. We got two lines open. 860-1440 are the numbers. You can fill those yourself. Before we go to a break, though, I do want to mention our good friends at Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. They know what they're doing. You talk about skilled labor, that is skilled labor. That's something way beyond most people can do, and that's why mechanics and a good mechanic is in such rare demand. I kind of think there's a Seinfeld episode where Jerry says, do you know what the value of a good mechanic is? And he was talking about he was willing to go through a lot to keep his mechanic because his mechanic's really good. And that's what it's like at Woodham Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. You need a mechanic you can trust. There is a lot of value in that because your car is such a big investment to you. These guys have been in business for 50 years. There's a reason for that. They offer great services at a great price. And the people in Montgomery, they've come to know that in the past 50 years. And that's why they keep going back to Woodham Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. And I'm saying that that's what you should do as well. That's where I go. A lot of people go there because a lot of people trust them and they have had good relationships with them for a really long time, because you cannot stay in business for 50 years without getting a good reputation and good business, return business from people that have gone there before. And that's what they do, because people like them, they're friendly, they trust them. And that's what I'm asking you to do. Whether it's something as minor as an oil change or getting new tires, or you need major engine repair, whatever it is that your car needs, they can do it at Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center on the Troy Highway. So go there today and tell them that Caleb sent you. Your calls when we come back.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
I recommend a general and public return of praise and thanksgiving to him from whose goodness these blessings descend. John Jay, First Supreme Court Chief Justice.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. And actually, we don't have any callers on the line right now. I thought that we did, but it turns out the person on the other side, very nice lady, very cordial to me. She just wanted to talk to me about something we were talking about earlier in the show as opposed to what we're talking about now. So do appreciate that. Just, you know, wasn't the right time, but that's all right. If you do want to talk about the video that we're talking about right now, 860-1440 would be the way to do that. You can also tweet in at Tactics Radio, and we'd be happy to read your tweet on the air if we can get it in that way. So let's go ahead and listen to the last little part of this video and kind of hash that out here. So this is from ATTN from Facebook video, viral video that's been going around, in case you're just now joining us. Here goes.
$3,100 more per year if union membership had stayed steady. See, this is why it doesn't make any sense when Donald Trump talks about reopening coal mines and old school factories. We shouldn't be focused on bringing back the jobs that gave people black lungs and broken backs. We should be focused on bringing back the things that those jobs used to offer. Fair pay, overtime, pension, health insurance. Because see, the coal miners of yesterday are the retail workers and fast food workers of today. They're flipping your burgers, they're bagging your groceries, they're making your little coffee art, all kinds of stuff. But they don't have the same power to bargain for benefits that people used to have. Share this video if you believe rich corporations should pay living wages.
Okay, so breaking down this last little part. First of all, there is a grain of truth in his last little argument here, which is, it is foolish to try to bring back jobs from the olden days that are no longer feasible to have, because a lot of things have changed in these industries, adding robotics, that kind of thing, that frankly, it's neither safe nor economically feasible for the company or for the worker to have some of those workers. So some of those jobs have gone by the wayside and they're just not coming back. And newer jobs have opened up. For example, we were talking about robots replacing employees and being cheaper. Well, that is true and that is happening. But somebody's got to design the robot. Somebody's got to come up with the materials to build the robot, all these things. So usually when technology does take someone's job, it opens up a higher skilled job somewhere else. And it will employ people just in a different way because there's still money to be made. And so not every time and not always exactly the same amount of jobs, but usually when a job goes away because of a technological advancement of some kind, it opens up jobs in other places. Usually that's the rule. So there is a grain of truth into that. But at the same time, even though it is foolish to try to just bring back some of those jobs, it's also foolish to kill jobs that currently exist. And that's part of the problem that Hillary Clinton had, especially in coal states like West Virginia, where she was talking about coal miners not having those jobs anymore. Or when Barack Obama said, oh yeah, they can open up a coal plant, but we'll just put them out of business. And he very effectively did for a lot of those plants, unfortunately. And it made our energy prices go up. But my point in all that is, let the market do its thing. It doesn't make any sense for Donald Trump and his administration to try to bring back a lot of those old jobs that there's no economic reason for them to be brought back. But at the same time, it also doesn't make sense to do what Hillary and Obama did, which is try to push those jobs that they themselves, not the company or the employee, deem as unworthy of a person. And so they try to get rid of jobs in that industry altogether. Just leave the market alone. It'll figure it out. It always does. And it'll figure it out faster than government will. Also, there are countless reasons why you could afford more. And I use that term loosely because there's a lot of things that retail workers and fast food workers, which are the two groups that he cited, can afford more than people did back in the day, because a lot of the stuff that they have now either didn't exist or was much more expensive back then because the market whittled down cost. But nonetheless, let's go ahead and follow him down this logic trail. There are countless reasons why a factory worker could, quote unquote, afford more back in the day. Part of it is because back then, our economy was based on the idea it was completely built around a single income home. There were some women and some moms that went out and worked, but not that many. And so because of that, the market saw that there was a demand for a job that would support a family by itself. Nowadays, that's not really the case, because what we've done is we have slowly transitioned into an economy that is built around a two-income home. And so because of that, and because a lot of moms are getting out into the workforce and that kind of thing, because of that, certain jobs don't pay as much because the demand is not there as much for a job that will support a family all by itself. And so it wasn't as though there was some central planning that did this. Over time, when women desired to get into the workplace more, the market responded with that, because the jobs market is a market just like anything else. And so that's a big, big part of the reason that jobs won't support a family now like they did back in the day for some of these low-skilled jobs, is because that transition was made. Also, inflation has served to devalue the dollar. That's part of the reason that that is the case. And another thing that he's talking about here, and part of the reason that that's the case, is because this country has just been through the slowest economic recovery in American history. I could cite countless economists that have talked about this, the biggest one since the Great Depression. And what you have because of that slow recovery is what's called underemployment, where people do have jobs, but they have jobs that aren't necessarily in their field, that aren't necessarily a job that they find sustainable. So they have maybe one or two or three jobs to try to sustain themselves. So they're employed and they have work, but they're underemployed. And so that's part of the reason that these jobs that he's talking about where you can't afford it are not there as well, because a lot of people now, especially, and part of this was contributed to by Obamacare, which I can even give some personal stories about that happened to me, where they're not allowing people to move to full-time employment. They're keeping them at part-time employment and keeping them underemployed, because the jump from part-time to full-time is such a big economic leap because of the financial burden on the company that they keep a lot more people at part-time these days. And so the three things that we just talked about, all three of those things are products of the left, which, by the way, most unions support. So ironically, the politicians and the policies that were supported by labor unions are part of the reason that those wages were driven down. Because it was always the Democrat talking point, we need to get moms back in the workforce, we need to get women. You can't be fulfilled in the household, what's wrong with you? You can't just be a stay-at-home mom, you have to get out in the workforce. Remember what Hillary Clinton said about baking cookies. This is a point that the left has been pushing for a really long time. Also, inflation. The left has always been, the progressives are the ones that want to take us off precious metals, stay away from the gold and the silver standard, and just print money like crazy. Quantitative easing, which Barack Obama supported, which devalued the dollar, that was a big part of it. And let's keep in mind that when Barack Obama buried Americans under a mountain of regulation every single year, that was a big contributing factor to our economy taking so long to get back to where it needed to be after the crash. And so all three of these things that we just mentioned that are part of the contributing factor to the reason that nowadays it's harder for example, a factory worker to support a family of four just on his income, all of those things are products of the left because companies are not charity organizations. They should take care of their employees, and the ones that do typically actually do better and make more money, which is an incentive for them to do so. But when you're looking at that, a company cannot only hire people as a jobs program. They can't hire people and say, well, we're going to hire you because we really want to support your family. That's not their concern. They need to get somebody that is of value to them, that adds value to their company and helps the company make money so that they can return that to other people. That is something that is involved in the bargaining process. So this whole living wage thing, you cannot make a company make the demand for an employee higher. It can't be done. In fact, what it usually does is it drives people out of the workforce. We can see this with the mandatory minimum wage, for example. The reaction to the mandatory minimum wage in a lot of the cities and the more liberal states that put that on was that they moved to automation. And so instead of having, you know, 8 or 10 people at a shift at McDonald's that were making $8-9 an hour, you had 2 people making $8-9 an hour and a bunch of robots and kiosk. So all that did was drive people out of the workforce and have more people on unemployment. So the unions actively supported politicians and policies that worked against people that they claimed to be fighting for. This video, at the end of the day, isn't about helping working people. It is nothing but a union recruitment propaganda video. That's all that it is, and that's all it was intended to be. And unfortunately, a lot of young people, a lot of people in my generation, are falling for it. Chaplin's report is next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Matthew 28:19-20. Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440. And newsradio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. Chaplin's report is on now. We join this particular scene where Jesus is there teaching to his disciples when something unexpected happens. A child comes up to him. And I don't think that any of the disciples really saw this coming or this lesson coming because of how they react to it. And in Matthew 18:5-6, Christ is giving an important lesson here and uses the child as kind of a teaching moment. And he says, "And whosoever receives one such as a child in my name receives me. But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, it would be greater for him to have a heavy millstone hung about his neck and be drowned in the depth of the sea." One thing that is incredibly consistent about God throughout the Bible is that he always denounces and punishes abuse and exploitation. This is something that he cries out against, sometimes directly, sometimes through his prophets, and punishment usually ensues for those who have abused or exploited some person or people. But there's one thing that gets God even angrier and usually brings about his wrath even faster. If you really want to see the wrath of God in the scripture, the quickest way to get to that point is to not only abuse somebody, but to take advantage of someone who's defenseless. This is something that gets God angry very quickly. And when we're looking at the issue of abortion, and looking at these children that have done nothing wrong, that are innocent, that have yet to even interact with the world, who really is more defenseless than a child in the womb? Because I can't think of anybody that would meet that qualification. When you're looking at someone who truly cannot do anything for themselves, an infant is about as innocent as it gets. And so that being said, I do think that it's important for us to think and consider that the people that are willing to do this to these children, that's not somebody that I would want to be. Because character is truly shown when the person that you're helping cannot offer anything in return. That's how you know that someone has character, when they're willing to help somebody and know that they're not going to get anything out of it. If our Christian love does not move us to defend an innocent child from being sacrificed on the altar of selfish gratification or convenience, then we have no right to claim that we are followers of Jesus. And I am terrified to face God in judgment one day because I know that I'll have to do it in answer for the crimes that I've committed. But I would be far more terrified if I were someone that had engaged in and supported this kind of behavior. Stay the course, friend.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.